All right. Welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It is the Dom and Colin podcast, talking more Survivor Island of the Idols. I am Colin alongside a Dom, so promises made, promises kept in that capacity, although the British accent may sound a little off this week. Joining me, instead of the usual Dom, is your runner-up from Survivor Ghost Island. It is Dominic Abate. Dom, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on? Where is Dom this week, month, year? What is he doing?
A fair question. What is Dom ever doing? But no, the
I
answer
feel like he's always moving. He's always moving. Right?
That is the current answer, or at least that is what I am being told, is that Dom is in the process of moving right now.
Wasn't he in Canada?
He is in Canada, and I think he's moving from one place in Canada to a slightly different place in Canada, but I don't think it's any kind of major move.
Okay.
Yeah, not as big of a shakeup as going intercontinental like he did last time, but still not able to be with us this week, but always good to have you in here, Dom. You are becoming easily a recurring guest at the very least these days. You are setting perhaps a record pace in terms of Survivor alumni appearing on this podcast. So we are okay at getting people to come on once or twice, but very few seem too interested in doing it over and over. So glad we could somehow rope you into this. I was actually looking at this earlier today. The last time I think that we had you in here was talking about the Stephen Avery case with Chris Hammonds, talking Making a Murderer season 2. Any updated thoughts on that? Do we have any information that's broken since that second season?
No, I'm just waiting for the third season to come up. But that's actually not true. I think we got together for the season 40 auction.
Oh, of course. You're so right. I don't know why my search returned these results in a different than chronological order, but you're absolutely right. We did our Survivor Season 40 hypothetical auction draft with Dom and Kaz. And in case anyone would be interested in that, if they missed it the first time around, definitely do, I guess, just Google Survivor 40.
We're probably just going to put it back up as 40 approaches, right? We'll just do a replay. We have to.
I will repost it. But if anyone's interested in finding that today, I won't be reposting it for a little while.
Let 39 live. Let 39 live.
That's sure. Right. Don't sleep on 39 here,
Don't
Dom.
Sleep on 39.
Yeah. But before so thank you, I guess, for being willing to come on so regularly and cover for British Dom this week. Excited
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, always excited to hear your takes. But before we dive into the specifics on Island of the Idols today, one question that I'm not sure I've really had the opportunity to ask of anyone else, but I thought you would be a great person of whom to ask this. What is it like in the year 2019 being someone who was a one-time contestant on Survivor, like only played once, but was featured very prominently about a year, year and a half after your season aired? Is this still something that is a semi-regular part of like your day-to-day life, or is this mostly in the rear view as you're just going about your own life?
As far as like recognition, like walking down the street, no, it's pretty much dissolved, which is good and refreshing. But again, it's definitely something that applies to a one-time player, even though I was on the entire season. And I say that because, you know, I just was in Running Up Reno and I was hanging with Tyson and Boston Rob, and like those are guys that have played multiple times. And like it just felt like every 20 minutes someone was asking to take photos with those guys. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, nobody knows who I am here, but everybody seems to know who those two are. And especially Rob.
Yeah.
I think multiple times throughout dinner, people were like just coming to the table and asking him. I was just like, wow, look at you, big time.
Well, I feel like you're somewhere kind of in between the Boston Rob multi-time and Tyson kind of multi-time returnee that any even semi-casual fan knows. And I also would say those guys are at like every Run It Up Reno, so that probably also plays a role in people knowing who they are as well. But I also would say for a random I don't mean to call them random person or whatever, but like
this was like older couple, like people in like their late 60s, early 70s, like just having dinner, definitely not playing poker, not poker players.
Oh,
I
wow.
mean, yeah, those people also, I mean, I would imagine a lot of people asked photos for them during the game itself, but I'm talking about like a dinner with people who just aren't there for the Run It Up Reno event, but just had to, you know, approach and say something. And I mean, I just, to me, I was like, wow, after all this time. But you got to remember, he's also on the screen right now again. And he's been, both of them, Tyson too, a multiple player, multiple time player. I guess once you become the face of the show, it's just something you live with now. You know what I mean? So,
and Boston yeah. Rob, by the way, is the total exception in that capacity. Oh,
right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. But it was interesting just sitting back and seeing that dynamic of it for someone like him who's played for as many times as he has. He's currently on TV now, and same thing with Tyson, very recognizable. A lot of people really just wanted to, you know, take that photo, say hello. Very polite. Nobody was aggressive. It was very piece cake in and out. But yeah, I'm just saying, compared to me who's played once. Anytime those people would approach, nobody was asking to take a photo with me, which was fine. You know, I'm good with that. So yeah, I think there's a huge difference between someone who's played once, even though you've been on the season for the entire season, versus someone who's been on the show multiple times. You've become almost like a household name or a household figure, especially if you're a Survivor fan. Even as a casual, you're not going to forget a Tyson or a Boston Rob if you were to run into them on the street.
Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with many one-time players that I think would even be that recognizable, and pretty much no one is coming to mind in terms of even being close to that kind of Boston Rob level.
Actually,
maybe someone from like season
I
one.
Did,
like,
I was actually recognized Saturday night at a restaurant in Montauk. I was in Montauk for the weekend.
I would honestly say someone from like season one, like Colleen, someone who happened to never go back would be more recognizable.
Absolutely.
It's like the only
person.
You
gotta remember the earlier seasons
right.
of the show.
It's
was
not even
more
fair
of
to
a,
compare.
Right. It was like a phenomenon in the early years, but
right.
now it's like, yeah, whatever. You know,
right.
That show's still on TV. Wow. You know,
yeah.
That's the thing I hear the most when people are like, oh, you're on Survivor? I can't believe that show's still even on TV.
That must be very fun and flattering and refreshing to hear
it's
every
like,
time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. The other question I had that I thought would be interesting to get specifically your take on is something that hadn't really fully crossed my mind until this week, but is something that I feel like has kind of been, in retrospect, building up, which it just in the back of my mind, I suppose, which is I feel like this season, Island of the Idols, and potentially last season, and maybe even the season before that, have potentially ushered us into a new era of Survivor, even beyond where we were in Ghost Island on your season, where, you know, every week someone was getting shuffled off with a chance to play a game for some advantage. But at least then, you know, two or three times out of five, there would be no game and nothing would really change that majorly within the game, the main game itself. And here, and not just here, but as I said, the last at least couple season or two before this, it feels like they are at the point where they now want some sort of twist or advantage pretty much every single week. Would you consider your season part of this same era, or would you say that it has been ramped up to at least something of a noticeable extent?
Yeah, that's a fair statement. It does seem like anyone that goes to Island of the Idols, they're given an opportunity to do it. Every one of them have said yes. And except for Elizabeth in the first round, she's the only one that didn't get anything, right? If is that right? In other words, she lost to Rob in the fire making.
Nora didn't get anything, but
Nora still set the precedence in the beginning of it too, just to say, look, if you do come here, you're not always going to get something. So it made the viewer be like, all right, good. There's not going to be something handed out every time. But ever since that one episode, it's like everything's been so easy and everyone's getting something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're right. Now there's like this overabundance of idols and advantages. And I feel like no one's been given an idol at this point. And if they did, it was like a temporary one or two tribal council type idol. the idols have all been found at this point on the islands, right? All the women have the idols. Is that accurate?
I think Jamal found the original purple team idol. But yeah, and I'm not sure what's become of...
Oh, Chelsea went home with one.
Right. I don't know if they're going to now put a new one in at this new Orange Beach, but that wouldn't surprise me if there is a live idol on this Orange Camp, too.
Now, who else has an idol, though? One other person has an
Kelly
idol.
Kelly has the hair idol, yeah.
Yes. So Kelly has one. Jamal has one. So those are like the solid... till final five idols in play and
no,
everything.
Chelsea, sorry to jump in, but Chelsea left with the solid one in play. Kelly's is good for three of her tribal councils, but I'm not sure how much she's been to at this point.
Oh, okay. So Jamal's only good for three of her own personal. So she's probably going to have to use it. Oh no, she could probably take it after the merge as well. Right. She'll be safe.
If she stays safe, but that actually, here's a question that I had for you that I brought up whenever Kelly found this idol, or in some recent podcast, I floated this idea, and I'd definitely be interested to hear what you have to say about it. Kelly got this idol, but hid it in her hair and has not told anyone, at least that we've seen, or at least that I remember that we've seen on her team about having this idol. I think she's been to at least one vote since then, but the general idea is, if she gets to the point where she knows this idol expires when she goes to tribal council tonight, but she feels like there's really no way she's in danger, is there at least some idea to just sitting on the idol and letting it expire and not exposing that you hid this from everyone?
It's a possibility, but it's
super
highly
risky.
Unlikely.
Super risky. I know.
It's worth having people, you know, question you the next day. No one's gonna be upset with her. I mean, if they had an opportunity, they'd do the same exact thing, and that's very easy to explain. But you're right. There is a small chance that people will feel somewhat betrayed if they think they have a really strong relationship with Kelly and she hasn't, you know, at least given that information forward. But I think that's definitely a risk worth taking and not risking your life in the game and not playing it. I mean, I remember at Final Five, I mean, this is different because everyone knew I had the idol, but at Final Five, I was actually considering like taking it home as a souvenir. I absolutely positively knew no one was voting for me because they just assumed I was playing my idol that they knew I had. I mean, it was like literally wearing it around my neck at that point. So but then you tell yourself, why would you do that? Like, why? You don't come this far in the game to do something so boneheaded by not playing something and then end up, you know. So she's just going to have to play it. And then she's going to have to explain to whoever she has to explain to the next day that, sorry, I had it. It came with the Island of Idols advantage. And yeah, I'm sorry I didn't tell anybody, but you'd do the same. You know, no one's gonna give her a hard time about that.
I had Kelly Wentworth on a couple of weeks ago, who is generally speaking a big advocate for keeping idols to oneself. I know you had a couple of, at least two or three idols on your season, and I know you shared them with certain people at various times. Was there ever an idol that you did keep to yourself?
I mean, before you play the game, you just set these rules and embed them into your brain. And one of the top rules in my brain was absolutely positively do not tell anyone if you find an idol. That stays to yourself. That's information that could burn you later if you end up divulging it. Do not ever tell anybody you have an idol. But then certain circumstances in the game, like, just switch everything. And for me, it was when Morgan got voted out, and now it's just Wendell and myself, and we're sitting there, and he just is convinced that there's no hope left. Like, we're going next. And what you need to do at this point now is tell your number one ally, look, I have something that can save us, but I need you to get creative, and I need myself to get creative to figure out the best way to use this item that I have. So even though you swore up and down you're never going to tell anybody, now when your back's against the wall, you kind of need to figure out a way to utilize it in a way that's going to maximize as much as you possibly can out of it. So I know Wendell's a smart fella. I know I'm a smart fella. Let's put our brains together and figure out the best way to use this thing so that we can both stay in the game. So that's the only time I'll recommend divulging information like that, you know? And then the same thing happened the next day with Laurel. She was like, all right, you know, we'll partner up with you, but we're still not enough. We need more. And I'm like, well, we also have something else we could work with. So now it became like, all right, if you're in my alliance, I'm just going to tell you, this is what we have and we got to stay tight. Because now it also becomes a thing of trust. Now you can use it as a bond, something to bring you guys closer together. And I just had a really good read with the people that I shared it with that they were going to keep it under wraps. And they did. It was myself who towards the end of the game kind of was letting people know I had it. And I was almost using it as a tactic to say like, look, I have it. I'm going to play it. Put your vote somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And now I would see if that would work. Like someone who I thought was thinking about voting me out, if I'd be like, oh, look, you know, I have this. So, I mean, I'm definitely playing it because I've heard my name. So who else are you thinking about voting for? Because don't even think about me. I'm playing my idol tonight, you know. I remember doing that like once or twice, maybe when it was like 11 and 9, something like that, where I felt a little bit vulnerable. I would kind of just like plant the seed that I have it, and I would tell one person who I knew would tell everyone else. And I'd be like, look, don't say anything, but I have an idol. I'm going to play it this time. So what are you thinking? Who do you want to vote out? And I knew within 10 minutes the whole tribe would know that secret, you know. It's almost like you could use people to your advantage as well by leaking information to them. If you know the right person, that's someone that doesn't keep their mouth shut, like Angela, for example. I would be like, Angela, I have the idol. I'm playing it, but don't tell anybody. And I'd know 2 minutes later 10 people would know what I just told her. So I would use her as a train, you know, as my hub. I would like feed her misintel so that she would spread the word for me. And it would sound like she thinks she's doing something good. You know what I mean? And that's like a small example.
Yeah. It's so like more effective to tell Angela than it would be to just tweet it.
Sure. I mean, she was pretty good. We called her like an ATM for info. If we ever needed anything, we would just go to Angela. Be like, Angela, what's the word? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I would say that circumstantial decision making that you just talked about when it comes to sharing or not sharing the idol is exactly what makes a good Survivor player. And while I generally am a big advocate as well of keeping idols to oneself, unless there is a very good reason to tell other people, I will happily acknowledge there are tons of cases where there are very good reasons to tell other people. And when those arise, you should absolutely be willing to do so.
Yeah, especially if you have no other choice. Yeah. You know what I mean? If your back's against the wall, like your options are super limited. But if you throw this piece of information out there, it opens up several more possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it gives you more directions to work in. And you'll be surprised who like warms up to the idea of hearing that you have an idol. And maybe that person was thinking about working with you, but they weren't sure. But oh, now that they know you have that, now they're willing. Now they're, you know, it really can create a dynamic that opens up more possibilities, but you have to know your audience. You know what I mean? You have to know the people that you're working with, and that when they get that information, you have to be able to react to the way they react. So it's a juggling act. It's definitely not something that's easy, but if you know your audience, you can pull it off. I'm not saying I did it great. It definitely was backfiring on me at certain points in the game. I remember being like, shit, too many people know what I do. You know what I mean? But like I said, if you can figure out a way to really use it and tell the right people when you need to, it's not the worst thing in the world. But to any new player going out there, my advice would always be don't tell anybody that you have it. Just keep it to yourself. There's no good that's going to come out of it. And it's going to be up to that person to determine, no, I can't do that anymore. It's time for me to divulge this information.
I would co-sign that for sure. I wanted to get your take just in general, having, you know, we just saw all these people swap into new teams. You're someone who went through two swaps on your season. One went a little better than the other one. Your first swap, all you ended up doing in terms of voting was getting blindsided at that Morgan vote. And then the second swap, you were actually in a situation where you felt so good that you were willing to cut someone from your original tribe in the form of Bradley, anticipating the merge coming right around the corner. But I'd be curious to know your mentality as you were drawing these new buffs, particularly the first time around, where I'm always, I guess, just curious about how easy or difficult it is when you swap onto a team with someone that was not from your original tribe to ever end up feeling like you can fully trust them. And I guess in your situation, maybe Donathan would be like the best example of someone from the original Malolo team that you ended up working well with. Was there a part of you that was open to the possibility when you were swapping for either the first or second time that if the buffs fall the right way, I'm totally game to make a new core alliance with people from this new group and roll that all the way to the end? Or do you feel like, you know, those early bonds are just too crucial?
No, anyone that plays the game now needs to know that you can't be locked and loaded with one group of people. You have to move with the tide, you know? When Jeff says drop your buffs, it is horrifying because you've put in so much work to establish yourself with a certain group of people, or at least know your position. You know what I mean? It's better to, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So that's what's happening as you do this swap. Now you have this whole new dynamic. Some people are new, some people are the same. You don't know if the people that were with you originally are willing to continue with you, or if they're going to look at those new people as a ticket for them to, you know, switch things up on their favor. And it becomes a really frantic race to win the love of the new people. You know what I mean? And that goes for the people that are coming to you as well. Like for me, I stayed on the same beach for all the swaps. I never left Navidi Beach. So I always had new people coming in. You know what I mean? And luckily, the Navidi had the numbers every time. But again, the thing with Chris was always very volatile. We couldn't get it going with him. I would say a good player has the ability to say my tribe is fun, but it's not solid. You know, I'm willing to be open to new possibilities. If you guys have something you'd like to offer up, my ears are open. I'm willing to listen to what you want to offer, and I'll see if something like that would work for us. At the end of the day, once you get to know people, you determine one thing and one thing only. Do I want to sit with this person at the end? Is this person going to kick my ass in Final Tribal? And as long as you think you can beat the people at Final Tribal, they're not that threatening to you. You know what I mean? So if four people come to you and they want to work with you, and as long as, like, you know, the majority of that four group you feel are beatable at the end, you're not going to say no. You're sure, whatever it takes, let's do it together. You know what I mean? So I think anyone that's playing the game, even as early as day one, I mean, you're really in the beginning, you're establishing bonds with everybody and anybody. You don't know anyone at that point. But by the time swaps come, now you're really trying to get a handle on who is beatable at the end, because even though you may think you're beating someone or not, you still have to find the right people to work with as well, though. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things that go into it. After a swap, mostly you just want to make sure you're still safe and established. And once you feel like you've got your footing and you are safe, now you're kind of trying to figure out a way to handpick who goes home and at what point and in what order, you know?
Do you feel like when you're thinking through this on the island versus thinking through it from someone else's position, is there a big difference in how you would approach this? Were you not someone who felt very comfortable winning challenges, finding idols, and making fire?
Yeah, that really – all that stuff is really comes second to the dynamic of the relationships with the people you have, and also the intelligence of the new people. Like when we did our first swap and James and Libby and Donathan came in and Laurel, they and Chris went to Ghost Island and we were 4-4, and I actually asked Jason this – I don't know if I'm supposed to get into that, but My question would be, like,
please do get into it.
Well, all right. Well, briefly, like, so if you can go back and remember our first swap on Ghost Island, this very similar to what just happened.
Yes.
With when Aaron came to Jason and said, Aaron was basically me telling James and Libby, I'm not Navidi Strong. I don't need to be with them. Chris is a problem for me. As far as I'm concerned, Navidi's a joke. I want to work with you guys. That's what Aaron said to Jason. You know, my tribe's done. Lyro's done. I'm with you guys. I want to work with you guys till the end. Let's kill whoever we have to kill. You want a lane out? No problem. I'll cut a lane. It's the same exact conversation I had. So my question to Jason is, like, did you guys on Vokai now think, like, let's pull a James Lim? Like, basically, we can handpick whoever we want to go home right now.
And the answer, it sounds like, from Exit Press is yes.
Yes.
Based on what I heard, it did sound like until they found out that one of their votes was going to be removed, I heard Jason on RHAP with Rob saying that they were absolutely thinking about putting their four votes on Aaron.
And that's exactly what you do, right?
Yeah.
That's textbook Survivor. I mean, if
you divert Aaron's vote, the three women vote however they vote, and then you put your four votes on Aaron.
And that's the way it's played. And Jason even said, you know, I'm a super fan, so I remember that move that James did, and he referenced another person that did something similar.
Rob in the Redemption Island merge.
Oh, okay. There you go. So that was surprising to me to see that scene replicate itself after seeing what I just – like, you know, the big shock Wendell and I went through when they voted Morgan out with that. I was like, why would anyone, like, just spill their guts to an opposing tribe when it's a tie situation? I feel like you got to hold strong. Even if you don't want to, you should really, like, not show all your cards, because someone's going to take advantage of that moment and sideswipe someone on your own tribe. So I was surprised to see that. I actually thought that was going to be the result of it until the whole thing with Elaine and the vote, the block of vote. But even still with the block of vote, you still are up in the air, like, is Aaron going to stick to this thing or not? And I think it made sense that he stuck with his tribe, because I think Tommy even said it during Tribal Council, where he was like, you know, we all Vokai at the merge, we have to go back, and there's a whole lot of Vokai left, and we have to answer for, you know, not sticking to our group. And that right there, I'd be like, yeah, you're right. I need to eliminate one of you right now if I'm Aaron. You know what I mean? So
right.
I'm not saying it happened in the moment, but I'm sure it's something that crossed his mind during the day as he was approaching Tribal. He probably was up in the air which way he wanted to go. But I would say at the end of the day, he's like, you know what? I'm going to be outnumbered at the merge, and I need to start building a little bit more of an alliance with some of my original tribe members. And it sounds like that was the right thing to do, because Jason was going to be very dangerous post-merge. I'm actually shocked he was voted out. I mean,
I am too.
So shocked. He just seemed like he was going deep. And
I love it, by the way. I had such high hopes for Jason, and for them to just rip them away from me out of absolutely nowhere, as far as my expectations were concerned, it is so refreshing.
It's refreshing as the viewer to know that the show is not so predictable, right? Even early episodes, you're happy to say, oh, good. Like, it's like Game of Thrones. They'll kill off, like, a main character early. And, you know, same thing. Like, damn, like, Jason was so good.
So I would say Stephanie Johnson was one of the first people they were willing to do that with.
Right. So just to see that happen, it's like, at least you know that the first 6-7 weeks of the show aren't necessarily going to be, let's just get rid of the lame players. There will be some big fish that go. So from a viewer's perspective, that's fun. But at the same time, man, I would have loved to see the damage he was going to do post-merge. You know what I mean? He's ridiculously smart. He knows the game better than anyone out there, as far as I've seen. And, you know, maybe his high strategy just scared too many people. That's how I take it. He just appeared to be – he was my Bradley. I would have done the same thing. Like, Bradley was as game smart as Jason was. And I looked at Bradley and was like, this guy has to go before we get to the merge, because he's going to destroy me later in this game.
apparently, you know what I mean? Yeah, in his exit press, Jason said he thought a big piece of why he left is because the other tribe didn't know his name. Jeff was never calling on him, like, during the discussion before challenges, and so they were all just calling him Fishback, and that put, like, a big target on his back
the whole
time.
Oh, that'll do it too, yeah.
On his Fishback the whole time. And it's the extra layer that makes that even funnier to me is Fishback, well, obviously a known strategy guy in his off-island career, when he's actually playing Survivor, is a remarkably loyal player in both of his seasons. So it's funny that he's the one who's getting, like being labeled a Stephen Fishback type is getting someone voted out. Seems weird and vaguely anti-Semitic, but definitely running bad for Jason there, I would say. And he was someone I had, as I said, high expectations for to be a big character on this season. But I want to quickly go back to something that you said about Aaron, because you tweeted, I think it was during this episode or shortly thereafter, that Aaron was standing out to you as someone potentially in the winner mix, and that has not been a super common take within the greater Survivor landscape that I have seen. Were you just impressed by what you've seen from him for the most part these last couple episodes, or liking the way they're presenting his story, or what is it that's standing out to you so much about Aaron?
Yeah, it's tricky because, I mean, if you ask anyone, and I didn't make a winner pick, so Dalton Ross was busting my chops. He's like, you can't pick a winner halfway through the season. I'm like, all right, fine.
You can't rank seasons before they're even over, okay, Dalton? Yeah. How about that?
But he's right. So I'm not going to say, like, I'm not going to ask for a trophy if I'm right about Aaron. I'm not. So I get it. It's halfway through the season. But I did pick up on the fact that there was that really sentimental moment. I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago about, you know, his socks with his son on his socks, and he was getting a little emotional. It kind of reminded me of a moment Wendell had out there, a little personal moment, you know.
Yeah.
And then this was a really good move for him this week as well, you know. And the fact that they're showing his a little bit of torment that he had having to make this decision, which way to go, that to me tells me a lot, you know, like they're really getting into a little bit of complexity in his decision making. I mean, I guess maybe that kind of applies to a lot of players in the game as well, but I don't know why. It just was kind of screaming that he's going the distance. Now, if you were to ask if Aaron's going to win the game from the beginning of the season, he just doesn't look like – he just looks too big, strong, like masculine. He's going to get – like I think I got a lot of responses on that tweet. Like, yeah, I mean, sure, it looks like a winner's edit, but like he's the first one to go with the merge, right?
Right.
And I'm like, you know, that used to apply, you know, big, strong guy going out first, the merge. I get it. And I guess
you did it yourself. You can't hold anyone.
I didn't do it because he's strong, noble. I mean, I wasn't afraid he was going to beat me in challenges. I just could not get through another day with him being on my beach.
So you're saying you could beat up Chris Noble?
Oh, absolutely. But the point is that I don't believe it comes down to strength. First of all, the individual challenges now have nothing to do. Like, you'll see more of the brute strength stuff in the group challenges as tribes, you know, slingshots and who can climb something the fastest or, you know, but when it comes to the individual stuff, it's really like, it's really mental, you know, and who's got the mental capacity to hold something in place or to balance a certain way. And that to me, I don't see any advantage in being big and strong in that capacity. That's really going to help someone. I mean, I don't know. Even in my season, I mean, I think I won the most individual challenges. And I mean, look at me. I'm a mess, you know, so it really had nothing to do with. I mean, Wendell kicked my ass 9 out of 10 times in any sporting event. You know what I mean? Sebastian, look how he's built, you know, and he didn't win any of them. So I'm not too worried about, I mean, the truth of the matter is though, you really have to get the tribe to realize that being big and strong at the merge is not a big deal. You have to be able to work with people. That's what it comes down to. I don't care what someone looks like. Can you work with them? And especially if Lyro thinks that Aaron is their savior now, you know what I mean? Like, this guy got rid of a huge figure on the Vokai side. You know, he got rid of Jay. It's his it was his decision to make that happen. And I don't know if Elaine's going to take the credit for it. Like, I had to block a vote. It was all me. It was all me. At the end of the day, it was Aaron that really decided to do that. So he needs to be credit. Not that he needs credit for it, but his tribe needs to look at him and say, we appreciate it. And you're our guy and we're working with you. You know what I mean? So it's going to be tough. There's no question. You got to break that stereotypical, you know, persona that you're big and strong and you need to go home at the merge. I hope that's not the case for him, because I like the game he's playing right now.
Yeah, I have definitely had my eye on him as a possible merge boot, but if he can make it through, family content is certainly never bad. I remember when we were talking about the way your season was edited, the whole season we thought it was very close between you and Wendell being the top candidates, and by the end, my tiebreaker and the reason that I picked Wendell over you as like my 55-45 was just how little we had heard about your family compared to what Ben Driebergen and Jeremy Collins got, who were in very similar situations. And it does seem like Aaron's at least off to a strong start in that capacity. But
I think I got some content in the beginning of my season.
You definitely mentioned having a wife and kids and so forth. But they really laid it on with Ben and Jeremy having young kids at home. And Rick Devins, who didn't even make the, you know, didn't even win. But I think Aaron's position is really interesting because he's coming from the team that is down in the numbers in the grand scheme of things. You know, of course, on your season, as I mentioned, you were eventually at the point after your second swap where you could comfortably like throw a challenge and get rid of Bradley, knowing you were going to have the majority whenever the merge rolled around and you would be in a good position there. Had you been at a numbers disadvantage, do you think you would have taken a different approach there? Because at least if I were in Aaron's shoes, especially having seen you know, you and Wendell get split apart and then come back together and work really cohesively and dominate all the way to the end, I would be very nervous that if I were on this new tribe considering flipping over with like a Tommy type, that Tommy doesn't have a Wendell over on the other side of this game that he's just going to link back up with if I help him get the numbers there.
Yeah, that's a valid point. If I didn't have the numbers, maybe my decision to take Bradley out's a little bit different. I don't think I really was so concerned with the Navidi numbers, though. I think I had more individual concerns, and the first one being Chris Noble. You know what I mean? And the reason with the Bradley thing for me is just because when I started the game with Bradley, it felt a little like high school, and Bradley and Kellen and Wendell – Sebastian, Morgan, they were kind of like very clicky, and Bradley was kind of the ringleader of that. So for me, I was like, I'm not allowing that group to get back together, you know? So for me, I was thinking that moment long term, and to me, that was more important than worrying about if my numbers were good or not. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather go down in lower numbers knowing that there's not this click that's going to take this game to the end, you know, these five people. I want to be in charge of who goes when and where and how. And I also had the advantage that at 13 I can play immunity, you know. So that was the first merge vote it was going to be. I knew I was safe for that. So I figured I had a little bit of time. If I could just get rid of Bradley and then I know the next vote I'm going to be safe because the merge is coming.
And did you tell anyone about the legacy advantage, by the way?
Last minute stuff. I think I told Wendell and Laurel very last minute.
Sorry, not important.
It's a good question. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I did let them know because, again, you don't want people to be like, oh, I thought we were in alliance. You didn't tell me anything this. You know what I mean? So you're kind of like, oh, by the way, I'm doing this. I'm safe tonight. So, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, you do stuff like that. But like I said, as far as like Aaron goes numbers or anything like that, it matters, but at the same time, I think a lot of people, including Missy, realizes that tribe loyalty is not that critical once the merge happens. I mean, unless you're going to play that Navidi strong crap, you know what I mean? I don't see it happening with this season. I feel like the cast members, once the merge happens, the people are going to figure out who they can work with and ultimately who they're willing to go to the end with. You know what I mean? And no one – and we could thank Laurel. You know, I was just talking to someone. She's one of the biggest contributors from my season, that nobody wants to have that straightforward finish to the end anymore. Everything is move making now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everyone I talk to, Jason, you know, a few people I've talked to, like, dude, Laurel changed this game. Like, nobody is going to just sit there and allow threats in this game get to the end. It just isn't happening anymore. It's not going to happen. And that's what I feel like. So if you were to sit there and say Vokai Strong is going to stick together after the merge and they're just going to pick off the Lyro people, I don't see that happening, because all Lyro has to do is say, look at these big fish who are controlling this game. You guys are going to sit there and let these people, you know, run it, whoever that those big fish may be. This season's crazy. You don't know who's the big fish this season, right? I mean, my season is obvious. Dom and Wendell are running things. A couple of people might have a shot. But for the most part, you could see the balance of power. This season, like, everyone has the potential to win this game, right? How great? I mean, maybe
it's great. No, you're totally right. It's awesome.
Right? There's a few people who are like, yeah, no, you don't have a shot. But, I mean, I didn't think Elaine – she was playing a good game a few episodes ago, but then she was kind of sitting back a little bit. Now she's all fired up again, getting advantages, and now she looks like she's going to do some damage. You don't know. That's the beauty of this season, and I think even last season too was really good that you didn't – I just feel like ever since – yeah, I think like within the last year, it's really been good where you just – you know people are willing to not – people are willing to make moves. No one's going to sit there and just let this season play itself out, and whoever's standing at the end, it's going to be a fight to the end. Everyone's going to put it all in there, and I've enjoyed it so far.
So – to quickly return to Laurel and the role that she's played, I agree that it is having a tangible effect, but to hear her side of how that all played out, I think it is a lot more understandable than the way it came across on TV and the way that I think it's been kind of condensed into an easily digestible nugget by the larger Survivor audience over the last year or so. Do you feel, I guess, how fair do you feel like that characterization of Laurel is as someone who just kind of idly sat by and let these big threats dominate the whole time?
No, right. It's the perception of the viewer who just thinks she sat there and
right.
and just decided. That's not the truth. She made the wisest decisions throughout her game. You know, whether it was fun for the viewer, that doesn't matter. She played her best game, and it might have been a quiet game, but she made it to the end. You know what I mean? And I know it comes – it's just – if she wasn't dealing with two monster personalities in me and Wendell, she had a shot at winning it. But we just overwhelmed the rest of the game. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't make bad decisions. I mean, everyone makes bad decisions. She could have done things differently. Let's put it that way. But – I'm not going to sit there and say she did anything terrible.
Yeah.
But the one thing she left behind, though, is because of the way she was perceived from the viewer, that they didn't see all of her substance in the show. They only saw what they saw. As future players watching and studying my season, you're going to start to make decisions about how you're going to play the game based on – even if it's an inaccurate perception of Laurel, it's still a perception you have, and you say you're not – you tell yourself, I'm never going to sit at the final three and get zero votes. I'm getting some votes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'm getting some votes because I'm going to do something. You know, so yeah. I mean I know I was with Laurel. I know I was there for all of her – thought process, all of her decision making. We ran through things together all the time. I know she did a lot more in the game than the show allowed to, decided to show. But that doesn't change the fact that what they showed is what they showed. And like I said, future players viewed that, studied that season, and made sure that they made adjustments based on what they saw.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked a bit about the advantage Elaine got, where when she went to the Island of the Idols, she, at the challenge, was able to scoop up this advantage that blocks a vote. But I wanted to get just your general take on the Island of the Idols as a theme this season.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's crazy though. I can't get over the fact that they're sitting out there living. Like, what are they doing?
Where are you on? Are they starving or not? Because it seems
they're
at least
not,
there's no starving. Way, right? That like immediately before they're about to go starve for 39 days on season 40, they're just going to starve for 39 days on season 39 too.
Yeah, that's odd. I mean, I thought, here's why I'm a little bummed about it. In the beginning, I think after the first episode, I did, I filled in for Rob on Know It All. So I was with Fishback and we were talking about how we saw the potential of it. You know what I mean? Like, think about being a vulnerable player in the game and you get sent to Island of Idols. And now you have two legendary veterans who know how to play this game. What I wanted to see more than like, all right, I'm going to pull a thing and you have till the sand runs out to make a decision. Like, I care less about that. What I want to see is like, look, you're Boston Rob, you're Sandra. I'm playing. Here's what's going on. Here's my play sheet. I'm in a tribe with this many people, blah, blah, blah. This person wants me dead. This person thinks I have something. This person does have something. I need to create a situation that I want them to help this person plan an attack to either get themselves out of a hole or figure out a way to take out a major player in the game and use these seasoned veterans who have all this knowledge on how to create a game plan that would allow them to execute something that's truly, truly effective in the game. And that's what I thought we were going to see as the season rolled on. And instead, it's kind of like these little, you know, fun, but, you know, not really that interesting kind of things going on. And it's like also the way that they determine who goes there. I'm not crazy about that either. Like the whole time they've been picking a name out of a bag. Right,
but they started with the name out of the bag. Then it
was
unanimous decision.
And now
it was
like she sat out, so like let's use the person that sits out.
There have been three different mechanisms so far to send.
Yeah. Was that convenient? You know, like you know what I mean? Like
I
had
no
convenient?
Idea.
Like, did they want Elaine to go? You know, I don't know. So, I mean, I'm always for trying new things, you know, but I also like to see consistency. You know, and I want to see in other words, I think the one complaint I had was like the season after mine, David Goliath, when I think Dan had his idol blocked, right?
Yes.
What the hell that Carl had. Mm-hmm. And that to me, I was like, that sucked. Like, at least let the players know that a blocking idol exists. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, that was just so horrifying. What a terrible way to go out, the way Dan went out. Like, this guy did everything he can. He was up however much work he put into it, found an idol, and was like, yeah, I'm completely safe. This is the rules of the game. I'm
played
playing
it correctly,
idol.
By the
played
way.
Played it correctly.
Yeah.
And, like, that sucked. So as far as this thing is concerned, I mean, I get it. Like, you have to learn about the Island of the Idols. Fine. I like consistency. And like I said, the way they're choosing how you go there is kind of wacky. I wish it was more straightforward that everyone knew this is why you go or the way you get there. And I just want whatever they decide to do with Island of Idols. I like, in other words, the punishment for not winning something, I want that to be not consistent. I guess you should be really, really be risking more and more as the season goes on. I don't know. You're right. I'm having a hard time with it. I was really hoping that it was going to be more of a coaching type scenario where you go there and get legit advice and you get to tell Rob and Sandra, this is my dilemma. I need you guys to help me get through this traffic jam so I come out the other side on top. That's what I was hoping for. None of these little quirky little, oh, you're going to win something, you got to find it, blah, 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 like whatever.
I'm totally with you, and I think the issue is this is not for us. This is for the casual fans who, just want Rob and Sandra on their screen and don't really care what's going on. And if anything, situations where they can just be kind of cracking wise at whatever the new player is failing at is potentially the best case scenario, as these two kind of like legends of the game, these sharks, instruct these little minnows about how to play good Survivor. But a question I would have, and I have no one to ask this of other than you on this podcast, because no one I talk to has a wife or kids, but I know your wife, Kristen, former guest on the show, by the way. We had Kristen on immediately after your season aired to talk through what it's kind of like going through the Survivor experience from the perspective of, you know, your husband has now left you at home with three little kids, and you have to deal with that for 2 months. And if anyone missed that the first time around, definitely do give that a listen. But I know she was more of a casual fan than you were, and your kids kind of got into the show, I believe, just because you were on it. Are they still watching, and what do they think of Rob and Sandra, if so?
Yeah, obviously we've been watching as a family ever since my season, so we still do watch every Wednesday together. They really take to Rob, you know. I don't know what it is, maybe has some similar attributes that I do, you know what I mean? So I think like they take to him, and his sense of humor they like. But like I just was telling Kristen over the weekend that she's never seen like All Stars or any of his older stuff. Like she says, like she loves him too. She's like, oh my god, he's so good. But she doesn't realize that like what the history of Rob is or the history of Sandra is. You know what I mean? So I'm like, we need to go back and like watch those seasons to really appreciate like what you're witnessing now, especially for, you know, the hypothetical season 40 that's coming out. Like, I really would like them to know all of the people that are going to be playing on 40 and have a little sense of history of who these people are playing the game, you know, because you just appreciate it a whole lot more. There's some storyline there that started years ago, and you want to see how it ends up playing out, you know? So to me, I'm trying to get them to watch a little bit more, but I think they just kind of like wiped.
Yeah. I think the show has decidedly and potentially, I will always happily grant, potentially correctly, in terms of what the bulk of the audience wants, really backed away from the strategic angle and really just tried to ramp up these like surprise and nostalgia angles. And I think Boston Rob and Sandra are just kind of the latest iteration of that, and this theme of the season is the latest iteration of that. I feel like, as I've said before, I don't know if it's the producers or the network, but someone who is making decisions has lost all faith in the game Survivor, and is at the point where they have decided that we need gimmicks every single episode. And it's just weird to me that we are literally now at the point where we have Rob and Sandra out there on their own little Gilligan's Island. Rob's building the greatest shelter in the history of this multi-story shelter, as they have little guest stars on a week-to-week basis. It is crazy to me that that is actually happening. Like I remember we used to talk during Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, or like Worlds Apart, about like what laughably contrived themes these were, but we are now just completely off the off the deep end, I guess, is a normal phrase, a way of saying things, where I can't even begin to imagine what we are in store for after season 40.
Well, I think you have to take your Survivor fandom out of the equation, because for people like you and I who watch every season, you probably know a lot more than I do, but like we analyze and critique everything. But like you said, they're not on TV for us. They're on TV for the other 98% of the viewers who – and I was watching one of the episodes, I don't know if it was past week or 2 weeks ago, where Rob had a moment, and I just imagined that like, wow, if I've been a casual viewer for all this time, it's slightly refreshing seeing his face, only because of it – it shows still like that the show, in other words, it connects the history of the beginning of the show by seeing him still on your screen. Now, it sounds corny saying it in that way, and especially for like us diehard fans, like I said, who critique every little thing. I mean, sure, maybe the reason they're out there is kind of cheesy, you know, for whatever it is. But for the casual viewer who may have got sucked into watching this show because of maybe seeing Rob as their first season or Sandra as their first season and falling in love with these characters in that moment, and maybe they've been watching ever since, to those people seeing them, they're not saying, oh, this is a dumb, cheesy idea where they're out there. They're probably saying, oh, wow, look, it's him, my guy, the reason I started watching the show 10, 15 years ago. You know what I mean? So we can't overanalyze things so much because of the level of fandom in which we live in. We have to remember that there's 98% of the people who don't see the show the way we do.
Completely.
You know, and you got to just say the producers and the CBS people, they know what they're doing. You know what I mean? If they're bringing them back again and they're doing it this way, even if it's not the greatest idea for us, they know what they're doing. And it's obviously working because the show is still cranking. So I think bringing some history back in and sprinkling it in here and sprinkling it in there is really good for the show for the long term.
I totally agree with all of that. My concern is just the twists and advantages going so far.
Haven't we just given up at this point?
That it becomes. So,
I mean, what were you going to fight? You can't fight it anymore. Right? You're right. It's gotten nuts, but you have to evolve, you know?
I know. You're totally. Like,
let's say you got a call tomorrow. Colin, we want you to be on Survivor. You know, I don't think I can because there's just too many damn advantages and twists and turns. No, you're not going to say that. You're like, hell yeah, let's go.
You do not know this, but I have never in my life wanted to go on Survivor. I have zero desire to go on Survivor. I would do horribly and hate every minute of it.
I believe that. I believe a lot of people that are diehard fans not necessarily want to play the game. You know, I get it.
I would love to go and just be able to watch in real time, but sure. I would never play myself.
That would be a treat. Like for fans that don't want to play, but just be able to be out there and like sit on the sidelines and see the shit that really goes
on. I'm saying they should auction that off to like celebrity Survivor fans. You can pay $1 million to fund the first prize and you can come and watch the entire thing.
You guys would all leave after the third day. You'd be like, this is boring shit.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on out there.
Well, the one thing I wanted to ask how you would potentially handle as things pertain to Island of the Idols, and this is something that I have taken a great deal of issue with ever since the premiere, is it seems very clear at this point the people who go to Island of the Idols are not allowed to tell the truth about what they just went through. And I think it was particularly brutal for Elizabeth and Kelly and Vince, who went early on and were just under the height of scrutiny when they came back. They have a tribal council to go to in a matter of hours, and they are not even allowed to tell the truth about where they just went off to, this mystery place called the Island of Idols. You know, at least in the early days of Ghost Island, people could come back with a piece of paper that said you don't get to play a game today, and everyone can understand that they don't have that much about which to be worried. Do you have any idea what would make for a good idea if you are in that situation where you are not allowed to be honest with your tribe?
Well, I think they did the best they could, right? What they did was they took a lot of the ideas from our season. They, you know, they just watched a lot of the people that are playing this season studied Ghost Island fairly recently. You know, that's what you do when you go out to play. You study the most recent seasons because you want to be as up to date as you can. So
what did
my
you
season,
watch, by the way,
what's that?
Which seasons did you watch to get ready for Ghost Island?
I remember like from Millennials Gen X on, I just like rocked those seasons from, I mean, Koh Rong too, but something about Millennials Gen X, because I'm like, I want to be up to date on the most newest, latest twists, turns. So I think Game Changers I skipped over. So I was probably Cambodia, you know, Koh Rong.
Good choices.
Yeah, they're entertaining, but like hard to like study because you get sucked into the greatness of those seasons. You know what I mean? You're like, so it's tough. So you're constantly note taking. So what I'm saying is, like, I think all of their excuses when they first came back, Elizabeth and whoever had gone early, Kelly, like, oh, there was an urn and we had to break it. Like, yeah, that's exactly what we did on Ghost Island. You know, so they ended up selling that BS story. And it's funny we're talking about this because this is another thing Steven and I mentioned. We were talking about how, like, a lot of people would come back and lie, right? All of them would come back and lie and make up this lie. And Steven was like, well, isn't there a concern that you're going to get caught in that lie at some point? And my response was, not necessarily, because once you have someone else go, that person has that same secret as you. And now
correct.
That's
but
a
Kelly
way
to, does, so when Elizabeth goes the first time, Kelly does not know what Elizabeth has told to her tribe, and it's
right.
just magic that they land on the exact same lie. And the answer is, it's what Rob and Sandra are telling them to say, and they're telling them this is what everyone will say.
Is that what is that the truth?
It has to be Rob and
I'm
Sandra.
I'm telling you right now, it could be that, but you got to remember, again, I'm not like trying to take credit for this on Ghost Island. I never went to Ghost, but I'm telling you that, like, when you recently watch something right before going out and playing, if you can tie something from the most recent thing you've seen and say that's your excuse, it's sellable.
I get why. I totally understand, you know what I mean? why either of them in isolation would completely that is perhaps the most understandable excuse.
But you're saying these are identical.
These are identical excuses on opposite beaches.
So then, yeah, maybe they were coached to say that. Sure.
They were coached to say that. But
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, no, it's just something that I am nervous about becoming more standard on Survivor. People finding
themselves. Yeah, because they shouldn't be, right? They should be good luck, figure out what to say.
Exactly. That is not at all what is happening. And that is what they would have you believe is happening. And that bothers me a great deal, but I understand, like we've been saying about this entire Island of the Idols things, certain things are,
Well, did all of them besides Kelly and Elizabeth, did anyone out there, did we hear anybody else's excuse for why they went? Like,
I think they just came back and said, yeah, what the first person said is right.
Oh,
I don't know why you would ever do anything else in that scenario. I think Vince gave some ridiculous story about having to run around the island looking for puzzle pieces in the jungle, and that potentially played a role in why everyone was immediately sketched out by Vince. But yeah, it seems like at this point, at least, people going to the island have now this solidified kind of group lie that they are all on board with, and anyone who goes later will probably just back it up.
Yeah. But again, the concern that was early on in the season was, are these people going to out each other for lying later when the secret becomes known to everybody? And I was like, no, I believe the people that know it are going to work together because they have this shared secret. And it seems like so far is what we saw, right? Elizabeth and Elaine were like, what did you see? What did you see? You know, so that's working out. But you're right. Once the merge comes and all this intel just will fall out of everyone's mouth. Like, once the merge comes, everything is out in the open. It doesn't take more than a day for all the intel to just be spilled.
And everyone's story will match, just like production ensured it would, so that the secret can continue to be in play for as long as possible.
And let me tell you, whoever's been there and hasn't used an advantage at this point is going to be targeted as somebody that might have something.
Definitely. For
you know
sure.
What I mean? Like Elizabeth, who came back with nothing and lost a vote. They didn't know she lost the vote. Her it never mattered. It never applied, you know, to her not voting. So it's just going to be in the back of their minds that Elizabeth has something. I'm worried for her early at the merge.
Yeah, I've actually been a big advocate for when someone loses their vote and puts the no vote into the urn. That should be the first vote Jeff always pulls out to make it clear someone did something to lose their vote and just add that extra paranoia in the game. And they do that on international versions of Survivor, and I don't understand why they don't do that in America.
Yeah, it's very rarely picked up on, right?
Right, but it could go a long way. Why, it's a free roll in terms of shaking things up, and it can also help the Elizabeth person get that kind of suspicion off her. And either way, it just seems like a smart precedent to establish. And actually, with that in mind, I had another question that I thought was great for you in particular, because we see during this episode, after Elaine gets that vote block thing, where she plays it kind of in the middle of Tribal Council, which is something you did. Was it Final Six where you did the idol that has that does nothing? Yeah. I feel like you told me that you didn't even check on how Jeff would react to that or what, but it seems important to me that a precedent is established between people playing idols and advantages in the middle of tribal councils and how Jeff reacts to them, because that could be enormous in future seasons if people are working on the assumption of when we see Ben Dreeberg and give Jeff an idol that works, Jeff immediately validates it, but when Dom does it with a fake idol, he doesn't say anything. Now we can tell immediately based on whether or not Jeff validates something the way he did with Elaine in this episode, whether it's legit or not.
Yeah. I mean, and for me, like, I didn't see the Ben thing.
No, I know you didn't, but any future players will have at least had the opportunity.
Exactly. So as someone who didn't get to witness Ben's little thing that he did, I went into it thinking I'm the first to do this. Even though Ben's was real and mine wasn't, I still felt like I'm changing the game right now. I'm going to do this before the votes are written. And my concern was, is he going to blow me up by doing this? And I realized in the moment at Tribal that he'll let me get away with doing this unless somebody asks for Jeff to validate it. So it's part of the reason why I was so aggressive at Final Six is because I was trying to just make it seem so blatant that I have this thing and I'm just playing it now and just figure out who you guys are voting for, because it ain't me. So, I mean, I got a lot of scrutiny because I was too aggressive. But for me in my mind, and maybe it was my exhaustion, but something was telling me I had to do it aggressive so that everyone just got so frustrated and just figured what the hell else do I do?
Well,
so
it sounds like the kind of classic poker, weak means strong and strong means weak.
Absolutely.
This is the ultimate strong move of protecting this weak idol.
Absolutely. And there's another little poker thing I did in there at the moment too that they didn't air. But I basically took out the real idol and the fake idol. And I was like, Donathan, pick which one. I'll play whichever one you want. Almost like in a hand where one of your cards, like let's say the flop is a straight draw and a flush draw, but one of your cards has the flush draw, but the other card is the straight draw. So you ask the person you're in the hand with, pick whichever, like you're going to go all in. He's deciding whether or not he should call. And you say, look, I'll help you make your decision. Pick whichever card you want to see. Mm-hmm. And that guy says, all right, flip that card. And it's a heart. And he's like, oh, you got the flush. I fold. Or he picks the other card and it's the six. And he goes, oh, you got the straight. I fold. That was kind of what I was going for with the Donathan thing that they didn't show. And he ends up picking my real idol.
Right, which you can't. So, you don't want to get rid of.
Right. It defeated the purpose of doing that whole thing. So I ended up like putting it all back in the bag. And then like if you go back and watch, you'll hear Jeff go, Dom, you're back in your bag. And that's when I pulled out the fake one again. And I was like, you know what, Jeff, I'm just playing this. I don't care. You know, so it was like this whole little scene you guys didn't see that like totally backfired on me. I'm sorry. Back to the game here that we're talking about, though, with Elaine. I think the thing with Elaine is that she pulled out a scribe, you know, a piece of paper that clearly was written in Survivor God language on a document that could not have been forged, and the whole tribe saw it.
Yeah. My concern is I would just certainly with idols, and I will happily grant that with Elaine's advantage, it's a little trickier, but I would still want that to be something that is played just before the votes. But in the case of hidden immunity idols, I said when we recorded our podcast the day after Ben did it, the day after you did it, or, you know, several days after Ben did it, several days after you did it, Jeff has said for how many years at this point, if anyone has a hidden immunity idol, now would be the time to play it, just before he reads the votes. When right. either Ben or you gets up to Jeff to try to play your idol in advance, if I'm Jeff, I would say, now is not the time to play hidden immunity idols.
You would
I've said 100,000 times that those get played after the votes are cast, but before they are revealed.
But you want to know what that is? That is lack of imagination. And I don't mean that like I'm crapping on production, but production probably sits in a room all day and tries to think of new ideas for twists and how we could change the game and do it a little bit differently. And it's possible that no one in production had the mindset of myself or Ben. You know what I mean?
Of course.
And I think when it happened, they were like, holy shit, like, why didn't we think that this could happen one day? And I'm not saying they didn't. Maybe they did. Maybe they had it in their head like, if anyone ever did that, we'd say no to it. But maybe just in the moment, Ben was so passionate about it that Jeff was like, bring it. You know, it's different. Let's do it, you know? And then when I did it, I guess he had a little practice already with when Ben did it. You know what I mean? Because just recently, a few weeks earlier, Ben was doing it. But for me, he knew where I was going with it. And I think he was saying, I'm going to let this guy do his thing, but if anyone asks for the truth, I'm going to give it to them and I'm going to blow his game up. And I just got lucky, and I attribute it to my level of aggression, which everyone will say backfired on me, and I ended up losing people because of it. And it's probably true. But I also felt like I couldn't sell the story without that aggressive approach.
I'm fine with Jeff being willing to accept idols ahead of time. If people want to be so bold as to say, I am making a binding commitment to playing this idol when the time comes, and I'm so confident in that that I'm going to give it to Jeff now, what I am not at all down with is Jeff then immediately validating it as a legit idol.
Right. I don't think he should have. I think the rule should be you can give Jeff whatever you want ahead of time.
Right.
It's up to the audience to ask him to validate it. And if nobody does, don't say shit. Let it play itself out.
Okay. Yeah, you know what I mean? I am with that for sure. I know we haven't talked too much about specific people to this point. We talked some about Aaron and a bit about Elaine, but I would love to get your take before we get out of here. I know you are up against the clock, and I definitely appreciate you giving me so much time already. But
we're good. We can go a little longer. We're good.
Hey, it's totally fine either way. I'm wondering if anyone in this cast is standing out to you as and take this question in the spirit in which it's intended. Does anyone have Wendell upside in terms of being able to just look good from pillar to post and end up taking it down? Or do you feel like this is going to be a pretty chaotic season with an unexpected winner?
I'm trying to see who has like a really clean, flawless, full game up to this point.
The main candidates to me at this point, I would say, in terms of having kind of Wendell upside, would probably be Tommy, Kelly, and Missy potentially.
I agree with all those. Tommy too, but like Tommy falls into that same category like at the merge. Like I fear for him at the merge. He's playing an amazing game though. Same thing with Missy. Missy, I love that she has the ability to, you know, go and discuss on both sides of the fence and to, you know, not lock herself into one thing or the other. Who was the other? Oh, Kelly also. Kelly, I haven't seen much from her recently. But what we did see of Kelly, I think she's playing an amazing game as well. But like I said, Aaron is also starting to give me vibes. A lot of people talking about Jamal playing a really good game. I think he's had good moments, but I think he's had a few slip ups as well. And maybe it's just because of those early moments in the game where he was having those slightly arrogant moments. Well, I'm going to take a nap. I'm good. Again, that might have been the edit. Maybe that's not how it played itself out, but it's what I saw. I mean, I'm just trying to look. I'm looking. I see Dean here. Poor Dean. Yeah,
the other person who was near the top of my list was Jason, who is now gone.
Yeah.
I also liked Chelsea a lot while she was still around, so maybe these are the people that are going to be leaving in the next couple of weeks.
I'm just trying to find that list I was looking at earlier. It's like disappeared on me. But yeah, everyone you said, I agree, all have potential. I wouldn't compare anybody to Wendell's game. You know, I would just say they're all playing strong games. He had a real custom thing with, you know, he in other words, he had a real good he had just this crazy ability to, like, just make people feel completely, like, comfortable and at home. And, like, he if you needed something, he'd build it for you. Or if you needed a belt, he'd tie one up for – like, he just was really good at customizing people's needs and delivering on them. And, I mean, there's people out there that are playing really good social games. I just don't know that they're playing, like, the same style as him. Yeah, like I said, I'm just ripping through this and trying to find this list here that I
it's been a pretty balanced edit overall, I would say.
It is. That's what I'm saying. It's yeah. It's you don't know who's taking this season down. I just the reason why I want to find this list is I don't want to leave people out who I think are playing. Oh, Janet, I love her.
Nice. Me too.
I love Janet. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say it, like, could she win in the end? And I don't want to say, like, because she's older, because that's nonsense. Like, she's completely broken all of those stereotypes. She's super aggressive. She's catching fish. She's starting fires without flint. She's just doing shit. And she's really open-minded in her conversation. She's having great conversations with people. Everyone seems to like her. I think she's playing a sick game. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I love Janet. I'm a big-time Janet believer, and I am not at all ruling her out. I feel like in the modern era of Survivor storytelling, if someone like Janet were to win, it wouldn't blow me away if she were less visible than a lot of the people who are in this cast that are just bigger characters. I feel like pretty much every single thing we've seen from Janet, albeit, you know, that hasn't been as much as we've seen from other people, I would say largely because her tribe is often the one winning the challenges. But everything we do see from Janet, I feel is really solid content and the exact sort of thing I would want to be seeing out of Janet if I were like a Boston Rob and Sandra coaching her out there on the island. So big time Janet fan. I definitely also need to hear your take on Nora and the role that she could play in this season, because I have had my eye on Nora in the capacity of being a potential front runner to be that kind of person where once the merge rolls around, they pretty quickly shift from big time target to person who's realistically not going to be getting voted out in a very long time because they are not a very big threat in pretty much any meaningful capacity. What are you thinking about Nora and her possible kind of long-term chances if she can make it through to the merge?
Yeah, and I found my list, so I want to rip through this list with you real quick, but we'll start with Nora. And, yeah, so Nora seems to be trying to show loyalty to people. I feel like post-merge, Nora is going to be kind of that person that is spilling a lot of information. I could see her, you know, she's the one that knows stuff, and she's letting both sides know, and she's causing a little bit of commotion because she just can't help herself. I mean, I love her. She's great. You know, but I just feel like she's going to have a hard time. She just seems like she's conflicted a lot. And like if someone presents something to her, she's on it. But if someone on the other side presents something else, maybe she likes that deal better. You know, so I feel like she might be a little bit of a flip flopper on her way to the end. But you're right. I definitely see her going the distance because like she's not really dangerous. Right. Like we could just hold on to her as long as we need to. And if the time comes, we'll just cut her loose.
Right. Exactly. Who else are you liking on this
season? All right. Now I got my list here. So Kelly, we talked about she's playing a really good game. She seems to have really good relationships with a lot of people, right? I mean, she's got an idol, even though it's temporary, right? It's not going to last that long. I think she's in a solid situation. I can't really talk long term yet about her. I need to see how the merge goes. What do you think with her? Kind of same.
Yeah, I have been, much like I said about Janet, immensely impressed with pretty much every single thing I've seen out of Kelly. It just right. concerns me that we aren't seeing as much as I right. would have expected a couple years ago to see out of an eventual winner, even if they weren't going to many of the votes. But in the year 2019, Kelly, I feel, still has to be at least near the top of the board.
Yeah, I mean, look at Chris from last season. Exactly. I didn't see him at all.
Anything is possible now.
Anything is possible. Karishma's next on my list. Love her, but she's not. I mean, she might be zero vote finalist, right?
I mean, I would see that probably being her. I could see her getting a vote or two.
It's possible. It's possible. And I'm not, again, this is just, I'm sure all these people are fantastic outside of the game. We're just talking about Survivor, purely Survivor play.
So you don't stand by what you said before we came on air and all the hate speech you were spouting about Karishma?
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
I don't see her getting much love at the end, but she definitely seems like someone probably want to hold on to. Doesn't seem like anyone that's going to cause you any trouble from a physical challenge standpoint.
Puzzles. I agree from the challenge standpoint. I could see her causing people trouble from a voting dynamic standpoint.
She'll cause trouble at camp for sure. Yeah. I have Aaron next, who we talked about. Like I said, I just one or two instances that screamed winner's edit to me. Besides that, I do think he's playing a great game. He's got an uphill battle ahead of him. Once the merge comes, how he handles it will show how good of a player he is. If he can bob and weave his way to the end, he deserves the win for sure.
Okay, yeah, I think he is in a tumultuous spot pretty much every round that he's going to be facing once the merge rolls around. So I am happy to see Aaron doing everything he can at this point, trying to lock down some long-term allies for whenever that happens.
Absolutely. Elizabeth also playing a pretty good game. She's on Lyro, though, right? So she's down on the numbers. Also, my concern with her, like I said earlier, was that she went to Island of the Idols and came back with nothing, and people may suspect her of having something. As far as that goes, she doesn't seem like she's going out early merge. She seems like she'll at least be in the mix for a while because she's team player. She's willing to work with anybody. I like Elizabeth. I could see her going very far in this game. I'm just curious if any of the Island of the Idol stuff's going to bite her.
Yeah.
Also, do we think anyone is going to go to Island of the Idols twice, or it's always going to be like people who haven't been there yet?
So I have been operating under the assumption that they do not want people going there twice, particularly twice early. And I was surprised that they used who's sitting out of the challenge as like the mechanism. But it occurred to me Kelly is on the tribe that is lower in numbers, so no one's going to sit out. Elizabeth is almost certainly not going to be sitting out of any challenge. So the only risk you really run is Nora sitting out, who I didn't check this, but may have sat out of the previous challenge or whatever, where this is a question that has come up on the podcast before. I would not be blown away if they end up having someone go back twice, but at this hour, I would still guess that they're going to do everything they possibly can to keep anyone from being a repeat visitor for as long as possible. And it wouldn't surprise me if when the merge rolls around, which I'm guessing is going to happen soon, there is some sort of mechanic to make sure that people are only going once.
Although it would be a real treat to see Nora go back a second
time. Of course, yeah, I would. That's a win-win if Nora sits out and gets to go back anyway. I'm sure they could easily talk themselves into that being a salvageable segment.
That was the greatest 8 minutes of television ever. Her trying to sell.
It was so good. Herself. Yeah. To quickly go back to Elizabeth, though, I know she was someone who came into the season as a newer Survivor fan, and it was awful, I thought, watching her just kind of get thrown to the wolves and be the first one who has to go and come up with this lie about Island of the Idols. But I think she's done an incredible job kind of recovering from that, and she's definitely in the mix for me as well. It seems like she is out there, even though she probably hasn't seen a ton of Survivor in the past. It seems like she's a very quick study when it comes to the game and is doing just fine socially. So definitely someone I'm going to keep my eye on as well.
Yeah, I think she realizes that she's probably not the biggest Survivor fan, so she's working on what she is good at, which is, you know, just being good in the social game.
And she's never going to be a huge threat. That's the fundamentals. It seems to me, at least, like she's almost the perfect level of threatening in a post-merge situation, where she's never going to be the biggest threat, but if she makes it to the end, she can definitely get credit for having done more than enough to pull her own weight.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I guess, what do you think about Lauren?
Yeah, I was surprised about her. In other words, she threw me off a little bit at the tribal last week. I don't care that she had a little bit of an emotional moment. That's not a big deal to me, but I thought that she had a little more control in the game than I think I perceived at tribal. In other words, I don't care that people get emotional at tribal council. It happens all the time, but like, the fact that she thought that she was potentially going home surprised me, because it made me think that she didn't really see what was the big picture there or mm-hmm. going on. And that just surprised me, because I thought throughout the game she seemed to really know what was going on. And maybe it was just a weird moment and the way it played out on television. I don't know. But I was like, just the fact that she got a little nervous that she was potentially leaving. I guess everyone gets nervous, especially when someone throws a little bomb out there, like, oh, I got to block a vote, and now all of you are vulnerable. But the fact that she thought that she was the one going, I was like, why would she think she's going? Like, she's not really.
I think that's an understandable kind of human reaction in the moment.
Agreed.
When you probably think, entering that vote, that if they are coming for someone on your side, it's not going to be you. Now suddenly, they may feel like they have the numbers and they're just trying to avoid who might have an idol, and things can very drastically change in the heat of the moment, I would guess.
What other moments from Lauren could that stuck with you, that like gives you a strong opinion about her? Because trying to think.
When they went to that vote off with Molly, I thought she did a good job early on, but she's just yet another person like Janet, like Kelly, like Elizabeth, where I would love to see more of these people, because I'm sure there is endless interesting footage. And that's why it's just so painful that we're spending 8.5 minutes a week with Boston, Rob, and Sandra.
Right. That's a fair point. We need to be seeing more of people.
I love the Nora show, but it really is coming at a cost to a lot of these cast members who could be, I would say, just as good.
I agree. And I know what you mean. It's you have to sacrifice something somewhere. We wish it didn't. The players themselves didn't have to pay the price for it, because that's what I was saying about Lauren. Like, I don't have a lot to really go off of with her. I just remember I remember not specifics, but having a good feeling about her since the beginning of the game. And I think the most recent thing at that tribal just took me by surprise a little bit, that she, again, I don't care that she had a moment of vulnerability. We all do when we play. I don't know. Something about it, just like, I was surprised, but not that big of a deal where I think anything, like, she's a bad player. You know what I mean? So you're right. I think it would be helpful to see more of these players that we're not really seeing that much of.
Yeah. But overall, I'm still very much enjoying the episodes on a week-to-week basis. Are you in that same camp?
Yeah. They've been super entertaining. Last week really was crazy with the Jason thing. And what are we thinking about Elaine here? Now, she just did this block of vote. She seems like she's playing a lot of big game now, right? Like if I'm Elaine and I go back to camp, this is like kind of similar to after the merge and Chris Noble went home. I go back to camp and I'm like, all right, that was a big show. The show is over. I am sitting under a tree for the next 3 days, and I want people to forget about me. Mm-hmm. Like, is Elaine going to be able to pull herself back after a big moment like that? Or does she not have the ability to, because they're not at the merge yet and her numbers are still small? I mean, technically they have the numbers, right? 4-3?
Yes.
So she's could kind of chill and feel a little bit of comfort. If I was her, I would just pull the brakes, you know, hit the brakes a little bit and not be so out there, because she's just going to create a real big target for herself. Like, in other words, she's just basically telling everybody, look at my resume had already begun, people, so you better catch up to me. You know, so if I was her, I would sit back, let some other people make some moves and just be willing to go along with them for a tribal or two.
Yeah, that's open to the possibility that we show up next week, and that is the approach Elaine takes. You know, after you get Noble out at that merge and say to yourself, okay, I've just executed this high wire maneuver successfully, and now the number one priority is getting the limelight off of myself before this goes too far. I fear that Elaine may get back to camp and think to herself, that was fun. I would love to be involved in more situations like that going forward. And I do think, though, Elaine will be involved in more kind of high wire acts going forward. I actually think Elaine is going to potentially at least be one of the most exciting players going forward at this stage, just because I feel like she is being built up as a character the audience is very much meant to know and like and be rooting for. Are your kids Elaine fans?
Yeah, they like her, absolutely. Because yeah, I she's like, got fire. Absolutely.
I feel like she may be one of the most popular kind of rooting interests for the average viewer at this point. And I'm guessing she's going to be on probably both the right and wrong side of a number of exciting votes going forward. But at this point, she is certainly not someone I'm ruling out as an eventual winner. But I would probably be saying the most likely outcome is going out somewhere in around like early into the finale, like sixth or fifth place, something like that.
I don't give her that far.
Oh, okay. Really?
Well, first of all, two things. Yeah. I think her adrenaline is revved up. So you're right. It's going to be hard for her to pull back and say, all right, let me stay out of the light for a little bit. Elaine, to me, if like I'm going to the end of this game, I'm not letting her get past 8 or 7. I mean, yeah, because it's dangerous, you know. You do end up going to 6, and then you never know. An idol could be like certain people you just don't take that chance with. And she'll kick most people's ass at Final 3.
Yeah.
For her story, her situation, her likability, her creativity. She's super fun. She's crazy. She's playing hard. Put it that way. She's got her foot to the gas and she's not stopping. And if she makes it to the end, there's no one on the jury that's going to say that she does not, you know, deserve to win. So if I'm in any kind of alliance with some set of numbers heading into like the last 8, 9 people, she's at the top of the list. If she makes it past 8, I'd be surprised.
So I know you're someone, or at least last time I asked you this question, you were someone who was saying, I'm not ruling out the idea of ever going on Survivor again, but I'm at least good with right now. You know, if that was the one time, that's fine with me. Is any piece of you, when you're watching these newer seasons, ever at least thinking or having it cross the back of your mind, I may be playing against some of these people someday? Because Elaine, to me, is standing out as an early front runner to be a returnee on Survivor and someone you may want to keep a closer eye on.
When I watch it, I'm not analyzing it in that fashion.
Yeah, like, I don't mean you're taking notes for a scouting report.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. You're not thinking that, because it's funny, even though you played the game and sure, there's always a potential to go back and play again. When you're watching it, it's still like you're watching a show and these people are imaginary and you're never going to meet them. Meanwhile, I met Jason and Tommy already, but when they're on TV, they're not real people. You know what I mean? So you're not really thinking, oh, I might end up playing the game with this person one day or anything like that. It's not till like after it's over and then like you encounter one of them and you're like, oh, we might play together, whatever. But you're right about her. She's definitely a potential returnee. I think Jason's a potential returnee too. I think he got a little robbed of the season, and I think if he had the opportunity to go back, I think he would do some damage. And I thought he was really good for TV. I thought Jason was a great character. I would love to see him back out there as well.
Completely, yeah. So if the phone rang tomorrow and they said, Dom, we want you for season 42, are you saying yes? Maybe this is a better question for Kristen, but in your mind, are you saying yes?
It just all depends on circumstances and where I'm at and what's going on. I mean, yeah, probably, right? I don't see how you could say, I mean, I know you say you wouldn't play. It's like I said, it's not the most critical thing in the world to me that I go back and play. I got the full experience. You know, it's not like someone like Jason who would be like, I got robbed. I didn't even make it to the merge. I got to get back there. I got to do it. Like, I had the full experience to just about the very, very end. Besides Wendell, I experienced as much as he did, except for that final little piece. That's a big ass check. But I got the full 39 days in. I got the whole opportunity to do it. Like, survivor wise, I'm fulfilled. You know what I mean? Going back and playing again, the odds of me winning, slim. And again, I'm not saying slim because it's me, but it's slim for anyone. You know, 1 in 20 shot at winning, slim. So, it's not like, going back, it just depends on the circumstances. I would love to. I mean, I still love the game. I still would love to take another crack at it. But again, I do have that thing where I'm content slash still sitting there like, all right, I think I could do it again.
That is exactly what I would want to hear, I would say. I think that is the healthiest kind of state of mind for any kind of Survivor alum. So glad to hear that. Dom, anything else from Island of the Idols or whatever, any other Survivor takes, I suppose, that you want to get out there while you're on the official record?
Well, I don't want to leave anyone out, so I'm going to rip through this. So Missy, we talked about, like I said, I think she's doing really well. Again, someone I wish we saw more of. I mean, we do get a pretty good Missy presence, but, people really shine once the merge comes. You know what I mean? You're kind of tiptoeing through the game pre-merge. You're just making sure you're not the one on the block and you're trying to get through it. Tommy, who's my boy and I love him, and I really hope he does well in this game. He to me is, we were talking how most guys, young 20 something year olds built like him, really don't have a shot to go deep, especially after the merge. But the one thing that he has going for him is that he's a teacher, which kind of takes him down a notch, you know what I mean? And allows people to see a more personal side to him because he has the ability to, you know, show that caring side of him as a person. So I think he has something that not most people in his, you know, physique type criteria normally have, because he has the occupation in which he has, I think really helps him that he's going to go far in this game. What do you think about Tommy?
Yeah, no, I definitely am a believer in Tommy at this hour. I share your same concerns that when the merge rolls around, it doesn't virtually ever to see, seem like without a super rock solid alliance, the Tommy types are ever able to go too long without being big targets. But it seems like Tommy's in at least some spot to, if he can make the merge, which I'm thinking looks pretty likely at this point, I guess he could be in trouble as soon as next tribal council if his team ends up losing. But if he can make the merge, I would feel good about Tommy being able to not only reestablish bonds with the majority that is controlling the other tribe that he started the game with, but also to take advantage of these newer bonds he's created with original Orange people and potentially connect well with both Dean and Karishma from the original Orange and current Orange tribe, where if there was some kind of athletic guy in their mid late 20s, how early 30s, however old Tommy is, who could make it through, it definitely seems like Tommy could be that person. Like when I was asking earlier about Wendell upside, I feel like Tommy may be the number one candidate in that regard.
He does. He has the ability to have I remember in the beginning of the season, the one thing that stuck to me about Tommy immediately is how many one-on-one conversations he had. And that to me is critical. Like you have to have one-on-ones. Those one-on-ones, if you're good at that, you're going to do well in the game. And he seemed to be really good at that. So I think even like, you know, they show how angry he was at this last tribal because he kind of like, you know, took it in the jaw. He seems like he's going to recover from that pretty quick. I don't think he's going to bring that anger back to camp. You know, he's smart enough to know, all right, I got to just suck this up and try to regroup tomorrow. And I think you're going to see him make a nice recovery from that. Whether he makes it through, I don't know, but I think he's going to do a good job of not blowing up back at camp. If he does, I'll be completely surprised.
I would love to live in a world, by the way, where we can come out of the first three episodes saying, or at least this is what I was saying. I don't know what you were, where you were, but, and I know I was not alone in thinking that some of the people who were getting the best looking content to that point were Chelsea and Jason and Tommy. And it'd be very funny if all three of them just fell before the merge.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I would love to live in that world where that's the way the stories are told these days.
It's crazy. Yeah.
We haven't talked virtually at all, I would say, about Dean. Are you enjoying the Detective Dean Kowalski adventures?
Oh, I mean, we were worried in the beginning, right? We didn't hear anything about Dean. We couldn't find Dean. He was nowhere to be found. He's another Long Island guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I didn't meet him. But yeah, so I was happy to see him come to life. Well, I was surprised by, I think two episodes ago where after the Chelsea vote, he was really, you know, not able to just, you know, congratulate the team for take, you know, for blindsiding him. I know it sounds hard to say, like, you're angry, you know? But when you get blindsided, you can't wake up the next day and start bitching people out. It's just not going to work out for you. It's not the way you do it, you know? So I was surprised to see how aggressive he was in those few, in that episode. And like Detective Dean, like even now, he's still trying to find out, like try to get intel from people. And he's almost like putting the pressure on, like, you know, give me information. What happened? If you don't give me information, I'm not going to work with you anymore. I think he said that to Missy, right? Meanwhile, Missy's like, what? Like, okay, cool. I'll work with you if I choose to. So, you know, like, that's where like Missy shined, and that's where Dean kind of like, I was like, ooh, good luck, buddy. You know, I don't know how he's going to fare. I hope he can figure out how to, you know, make that adjustment with that, because nobody's going to put up with him and his, you know, aggressiveness after something doesn't go his way. You know, everyone's like, all right, buddy, you know, you're next. Don't worry. We'll send you on your way. What would you say about Dean?
Hard to tell with Dean at this point. He seems like another guy who's just going to have an impossible time staying under the radar in any kind of post-merge setting. And I would be looking at him, if he does in fact make the merge, being a pretty early target after that. Like, I'm temporarily penciling him in as someone who's going to be leaving in like 12th, 11th, 10th place, someone shortly after the merge.
Yeah, I think so too. It's odd though, because in his confessionals, he seems really self-aware. You know what I mean? Like, he seems to like know what's going on, but then like it seems like he has a hard time like containing his feelings, and he needs to like just speak his mind sometimes. Will that be his downfall, or will like his physical, you know, his strength, his speed, you know, all the challenge shit, is that going to be the issue, the reason why he goes home?
That's more what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so though. I don't think that's going to be an issue as much as like his reactions to things not going his way, I think is going to be more of an issue for him.
To me, it's just the lack of connecting in any really meaningful way that I've seen with anyone besides Chelsea, combined with being an obvious physical threat.
That's the best way to put it. So he's got a couple things against him that he needs to work on for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have an official winner pick at this hour? Are you sticking with Aaron, or are you going to just keep avoiding answering that question? And then on finale night, 10 minutes before we see the final vote, you'll lock in your winner pick.
I mean, I like Missy. I like Aaron. I like Tommy. Like I said, Jamal has real good potential, except for a few early moments in the season. But that doesn't mean anything, because I had some shitty moments in the beginning of my season. I went the distance.
I don't even know if I have an official winner pick.
I mean, Kelly too, right? She's at the top of my list. I didn't see her there, but yeah. I'm gonna stick with, and it's more of a long shot, but I'm gonna stick with Aaron. That sounds a little wacky. I'm gonna stick with him though.
I like it. I like planting your flag.
I'm going with that.
I guess in a similar light, although this is probably a more popular pick than Aaron. At this hour, I guess I will stick with my girl Kelly, who I've just been very impressed with every time we've gotten to see her, even though she hasn't gotten the same level of like positive visibility as some other people. But I do think it's still totally wide open. There are only one, maybe two people that I would say have pretty much no chance at this point. So yeah, very much looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I think we may just have what, one episode left before we merge? Are we thinking merge at 13 as usual?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be one more than the merge. Yeah,
that's exciting. I know this is a season where I've talked a lot about how the twist is kind of biting into how much I'm enjoying the actual main game. But, you know, the merge is always going to be pretty thrilling in any season of Survivor. And I'm optimistic that as we get fewer and fewer people, we will get to start seeing more and more about what's really going on out there and less about whatever's going on with Boston Rob and Sandra. Maybe I'm a moron for feeling like that swing might take place down the line, but I'm hoping that over the course of the game, as more and more people who are in the main game have already been to see Rob and Sandra, that maybe their role kind of changes in some way. Do you feel like...
I'm sure it'll change. Yeah, sure their role will change. Or you just might see a lot less of them. You know what I mean? Maybe they've beaten something to death and, you know, like, all right, how many more times are we going to do that? Like, I guess it'll also be advantage-dependent, aisle-dependent, how much stuff's in play. You'll see less of them if there's too much stuff out there, I think. You know what I mean?
And they're clearly so out of ideas, even after the first two or three visits with Rob and
Sandra. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. It's been a lot of stuff. But maybe they can carve it out so that they do change the dynamic of what their role is. And like I said, I would still love to see it be more strategic counseling than, you know, winning something. Like, I would, if I'm out there and Boston Rob and, you know, two other master strategists of the game are there, I'd be like, keep your advantage. I'm picking your brain for 20 minutes. Here's what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's how I would want it if I was a player out there. So maybe we'll get lucky and get some of that. That'd be great. I have Jack here still, who we haven't talked about.
And, not a great week for Jack.
Not
a terrible week. I thought by the end of that scene, he came across as having handled himself well. But I would say, you know, full credit to Jamal for, I would guess, bringing us to that point. It's probably shame on us for not already addressing this sooner, but we've kind of been all over the place.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really great scene that, as far as I'm concerned, when we look back on this season in history, I would guess that this is going to be one of the at least four or five most memorable scenes from this entire season.
Oh, absolutely. And anytime you can have two open-minded people having a discussion, especially an uncomfortable discussion that, you know, doesn't take place every day, and both sides are willing to, you know, just openly hear each other out. People can make mistakes. I mean, look, I played the game for 39 days with Wendell and Laurel. I'm sure I may have ignorantly said something that in my mind I didn't realize was appropriate or inappropriate. I'm not saying I did. I can't think of anything, but it's good to be aware of things. Like, I learned a lesson in this scene, you know what I mean? And race conversations don't come up all the time between black and white people. It's for whatever reason. I mean, I'm sure there's many reasons. It's an uncomfortable thing to talk about. And like I said, if you can have two people, three people, a group of people open-mindedly speak about this, it only leads to progress. So I had to watch it a few times, you know, I just like watched the whole thing. And then like by the second or third time I watched it, I was like, that was really productive at the end of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I had someone in my real life who doesn't watch Survivor hear about this scene and ask me about it.
Oh, really? So it's been that well planted into
apparently,
the world.
Yeah.
That's great. Right.
The same thing. Well, they thought there was some kind of like huge racial controversy where Jack was like using a bunch of ethnic slurs or whatever, but obviously not the case. But yeah, at least in some capacity, it is getting out there into the broader zeitgeist.
And again, I'm not going to go too deep down this hole because it's, you know, it's a whole nother podcast.
Right.
But my confusion the first time I watched the scene, and again, this shows my ignorance as well, is I didn't see the insult with the term do-rag. That also, for me, is because I didn't. I just thought anything on someone's head was a do-rag. I didn't know specifically it was a specific thing. I didn't know if it was worn specifically in the black community. I was confused. And then, like, I work with people of all races on my crew, and I had the discussion at work. And I, when we in the discussion, I was like, you know, was this insulting in any way? And I'm like, you know what? In certain contexts, it could be. And I showed the scene, you know, and I'm like, the whole crew was like, just like, wow, the way it was handled. Cause I work with a lot of rough guys in Brooklyn. And we were like, yeah, that shit wouldn't fly. Like it wouldn't be so like well done the way it was done on the scene. You know what I mean? So, it was good to see their reactions from it, but it was important for me to talk to some of the black guys on my crew because I needed to understand it myself because I'm honestly telling you my ignorance that I didn't see what was wrong with it. But then you go back and watch, even Jamal says some people may not understand why the term do-rag is insulting, but then he goes into it and really says it in a really well done way that you can put yourself there and say that makes sense to me. So like I said, after having a conversation with some guys at work and watching it a few times, now I'm like, that's how you do it. You know what I mean? And if people can continue to do things like that moving forward, progress will take place, you know? So I was really happy with the way it ended up playing out. And I don't think Jack had a bad episode. I think it showed a great side of him that he realized his mistake and was able to address it. And I think if more people can do that in life, then we're just going to live in a better world. You know what I mean?
Totally fair. Yeah. What do you think about Jack's kind of long-term prospects?
Yes. Let's talk about Jack's game. I think I don't see enough of him. I don't know about his game too much. I know that he seems to be, regardless of the whole scene, he seems to be in with Jamal. He seems to be in with who else are they working with? Because isn't Jamal kind of on the outs a little bit?
He was back. Jack and Jamal were in tight with Molly back when she got blindsided. And they were having, but it and seems were, like that
oh, Dean is trying to team up with Jamal, right? Because Dean was saying that Nora's trying to work against them.
Yes. Yeah.
So, okay. So that sounds a little confusing. I need to see kind of how it plays out another episode. I think Jack's in a good spot. I can't see him going home. He doesn't seem like there's nothing that's indicated he's a huge threat and he's on the block anytime soon. So something tells me he'll be out there. I mean, if I can compare him to Sebastian in my season, you know, Sebastian made it to six.
That's exactly what I was about to do is I feel like Jack is going to be in that Sebastian role. And sorry if that's the laziest comparison because they're just the token long hair guy of the season. But it does seem like Jack is in a solid spot on his current tribe. But kind of like what we were saying about Aaron and Dean earlier, it just seems next to impossible that Jack is ever going to be able to skate for too long post-merge before. I feel like even Final Six was potentially above Sebastian's general expectation for when he's going to become a target on Survivor.
Yeah. Yeah. He was up in the air quite a bit. yeah. So yeah, I would say Jack's going to be around for a while for sure. Yeah.
And then the other person who I don't think has come up even once in this podcast, but I guess let's get your take on Dan on the record here. I think he's like a talent agent or some kind of like Hollywood executive that seems to just be mostly on the winning tribe. And he is the person, just for the record, that I declared just completely done after the first episode with that scene of him being a little touchy with Kelly and the other women. It seemed to me like he is someone we are not necessarily meant to be rooting for to this point, and I don't anticipate him being someone in the winner mix post-merge. But what are you thinking about Dan, if anything, here?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you got a little bit of besides that early episode with the whole touchy thing, like there's really been nothing of substance about Dan. We see that he's you know, pretty much a team player. He seems really excited in the challenges, and when the team wins, he's all, you know, jumping for joy and hugging everybody. So it seems like he's really into it. He seems like he's enjoying it. But we're not like, what, like, how many conversations do you recall over the last 7 weeks do you see of Dan having a one-on-one with someone and really, really like showing us who he is? I don't feel like we've gotten much of that.
Yeah. And again, I think he's been on most of the tribes that win the challenge. And in this season with Boston Rob and Sandra taking up 8.5 minutes a week, we generally only get to see one segment from whichever team ends up winning the immunity challenge. So I'm happy to grant that it's totally possible Dan is out there every day having one-on-ones with people. It just seems to me like it is likely not going to be amounting to too much, if anything, once Dan does become a focal point.
Yeah, I really don't have much more to say on that because
we've seen very little out of out of a lot of these people,
a lot of Dan,
which is pretty frustrating. But hopefully we can get to see more as these numbers kind of dwindle, and hopefully Rob and Sandra take up less time as the season goes forward. Is there anyone else that we haven't hit on yet?
I think we hit on all of them. Jason went home, and Jamal we talked about briefly. Like I said, he's in the mix for me.
Yeah.
Because he's cleaning things up. His game is like I said, like earlier in the, for me, it takes like a huge blindside against you to open your eyes to fix and correct your game and make adjustments. That happened to Jamal early in the season, the same way it happened to myself and Wendell. And we knew moving forward how to make adjustments, stay on your toes a little better. He seems to have been doing that. He's like, even though he's not necessarily running things in his camp anymore, you know, he may even be outnumbered. He seems to be doing okay, holding his own, and that he's still building relationships. And I think he's going to be around for a while.
I would co-sign that. I am liking a lot of what I've seen out of Jamal to this point, and he seems like he could be a pretty fun character to have around for a while. So rooting for that to come in. Dom, thank you so much for taking so much time and talking with me for so long today.
Absolutely. Also, I just wanted to, I mean, it would be a sin not to mention the passing of the great Rudy Bosch.
Oh, of course. Yes. Thank you. Truly, as I retweeted a tweet from Eric Stein, former Big Brother player Eric Stein, who I thought put it well, that reality TV would not be what it is if it weren't for Rudy Bosch, really connecting with so many Americans during that original season of Survivor. There's very little doubt in my mind that Survivor would have hit its 36th season for you to participate on were it not for Rudy. So definitely very sad to hear that news. But and, you know, of course, all the best to the rest of the Bosch family out there. But you know, I'm sure the Survivor community will, at least based on what I've seen so far, handle this in a healthy and kind of positive way. And I am guessing on finale night, Jeff will probably say something heartfelt about Rudy, and that will hopefully put a nice bow on it. And we can, I don't mean to make it, I don't mean to like dismiss it and say we can move on, because it's obviously a big loss for the community, but I'm sure that, right, you know, we'll be able to get through it, and his spirit will live on with Survivor forever, for sure.
Absolutely. It's just worth mentioning. I mean,
for sure. Thank you.
Not that anyone listening to this podcast doesn't already know that, I'm sure, you know. But I felt appropriate to just mention that little thing.
No, it definitely is. Rudy, a true, just all-time icon of Survivor as a franchise. Like, I genuinely think if you were to put together a Survivor Mount Rushmore of just the most important people in keeping this show on the air for 20 years, Rudy is at the very least a candidate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, Dom, where can people be finding you on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere else if you want people finding you?
Yeah, it's Twitter and Instagram, I think, is my name, Dominic_Abate.
All right. Well, thank you one more time for giving me so much of your evening here. I will let you get going to the Giants game. Thank you guys who have made it this far into the podcast. We'll be back next week, hopefully with British Dom again, although TBD on that front. We'll see if he's done moving or if he's off moving somewhere else by then. But we will talk to you very soon either way. Take care, everybody.